Excellent Podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and with each installation of this podcast, we're going to explore the world of spirituality, what it means to be alive, and how is it that we can bring our spiritual selves, tarot, meditation, religious or spiritual practices, into our daily lives. Please check out all of our episodes at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search The Hermit's Lamp in podcasts on iTunes and download them all directly that way. So while I've got you here listening to this podcast, I want to mention a new project that I am rolling out. Can you imagine working with a tarot that reflected you in your life? Can you imagine working with a deck where all of the imagery was tied to your specific experiences, imagery, and history? Can you imagine going through a six-month journey of working with each of the cards and being guided through a process to help reveal both their nature and your relationship to them? Well, if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, then I invite you to check out my new project called A Tarot of Yourself, and it can be found at thehermitslamp.com/tarotofyou. The first round of this project is going to start in September. However, at any point, you can jump in and start your own journey with this process. So do go and check it out, thehermitslamp.com/tarotofyou, all one word. So welcome to the next installment of the Hermit's Lamp podcast. I'm here this week with Joanna Powell Colbert, creator of, amongst other wonderful things, the Gaian Tarot, one of my personal favorite decks. A deck that is always within arm's reach, both at work and at my house. And when I brought the deck home the first time, my partner immediately informed me that it was no longer my copy. So it's an amazing deck that is well worth checking out. And, you know, let's see what we have to say today. So, Joanna, for people who might not know you, who are you? What are you doing? What are you about these days?
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks for having me on the podcast. I really appreciate it. What am I doing these days? I am traveling way too much and looking forward to spending a little bit more time at home. We moved back to a tiny island where we used to live, where I created the Gaian Tarot. We had moved back to the mainland and very suddenly decided to move back to the island. And since I moved back, I've been taking workshops and teaching workshops and traveling, so I'm really looking forward to staying home and really kind of getting settled into the land here and the ocean here, because it's really where I get my spiritual sustenance, so I'm really thrilled. But you didn't really ask me about that. As far as my work goes, I'm working on e-courses and retreats and one-day workshops, and I have a new book and oracle deck that I'm also working on in the background. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think that I'm excited, and maybe we'll talk about your new projects later on, but I actually am really interested in the first part of things that you talked about, you know, this reconnecting to the land, you know, the way in which we, from what I see on Facebook, you know, when I peep into your life through there,
yeah.
this sort of connecting to the earth and to the plants and to the birds and that real connection to nature, that's something that I'm really fascinated by, because it seems very powerful to me, and I know in my life it's very powerful, and it seems like it's a prominent part of your life. So, yeah, I'm wondering what that is like for you these days.
Well, when I first came to Lummi Island in the mid-90s, which is, it's a very tiny island in the Pacific Northwest, and we like to say it's the size of Manhattan, but it's population 900 as compared to the millions that live in Manhattan. But when I first came here, it was like, you know, meeting the love of your life and just having that kind of impact of just completely and divinely falling in love with a place. And it took me a few years to get here. And when I did, I would go for walks and just kind of commune with the land. And the idea for the Gaian Tarot was born here and nurtured here. And a lot of the imagery from the deck are specific places and people right here in this land. And then we left and went back to the mainland because living on a tiny island is very challenging in some ways. And after 6 years, which I now think of as exile, even though I had a beautiful home in the woods there too, but we very suddenly decided to come back this year. And I'm not only am I picking up my old ways of doing things, but new ways are coming to me. And one of the things that I absolutely love to do is go for what I call medicine walks, where I'll just, I'll carry a question with me, and it might be a question for me, or it might be a prayer that I have for someone else who I know is suffering. And I usually walk down to the beach and I just notice everything that's going on. If there's jellyfish on the beach, if there's herons flying, if the fishing boats are out, you know, where the tide is, whether there's fog or sunlight sparkling on the water, and I'm just kind of aware of everything that's going on, and I might, you know, build little altars on the beach or make little mandalas and patterns out of shells, and it's kind of a to me, it's my devotion. It's how other people would go to church. I go to the beach, you know, and I just spend time communing with the nature spirits and with what I call Mama Ocean. And I also listen, you know, and I listen. And sometimes I've started to read the omens and signs in nature the way that we read tarot cards. So, that's kind of something new that I've been doing lately, but does that answer your question?
Yeah, it totally does.
Yeah, good.
You know, I think it's an interesting distinction of devotion and connection, because when I sort of see people, you know, in clients or in you know, on Facebook and places like that, there's this sort of tendency that people go to spirit looking for something. And it's not that you're not looking for something in your journeys, but, mm-hmm. but I also sort of hear this reverence and sort of putting connection and connecting to those things first in what you said. And I think that's an important part, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of hard for me to imagine doing it any other way. It's like, you know, think about meeting a person like I've just kind of met you online here, right? I've known you online for a while, but we're like meeting, we're having a intentional conversation right now, which we've never really had before. So, you know, if I just came to you and said, well, Andrew, you know, I really want you to do a spell for me, please. I need some more money or something like that. I mean, it's kind of like, that's rude, right? We're going to get to know each other. Mm-hmm. We're going to find a heart connection. We're going to find how we think alike or don't think alike. And so, you know, with a person, you don't walk up to a person and immediately ask them to do something for you. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's the same way with spirit, whether we're talking about, you know, nature spirits or the great mystery, you develop a relationship first and you fall in love first before you start asking for things. And I also think there's something about walking a fine line between focusing your will to manifest something in your life and surrendering to the divine flow. And I think that's where wisdom comes in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we use the tools of divination too. It's like, okay, here's something I really, really want, but is that really the best thing for me? You know, is that for my highest good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This summer I taught a course on reading for yourself. And, one of the various topics we covered was, divination and magic. And, you know, the whole process starts off with the question, should I do anything magical about what I'm thinking about or what I'm focusing on? And right. It was very interesting because the person who was the example in the class, who sort of stood up to kind of go through the process for everybody else, the answer was mm-hmm. no, no. Like we went through a different number of different things. And the answer was no the whole yeah. time. It was like, okay, well yeah. then. Let's go into a different conversation mode about this, right? Because yeah, sometimes yeah. it's the worst thing to do. Sometimes, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's maybe it's the wrong focus. Maybe there's something we don't see. You know, it's very very interesting in that way. I also really like the idea that you were talking about there of building a relationship. You know, I mean, on the one hand, of course, the sacred is the sacred, the divine is the divine, and it is not a human being. And we need to be mindful of kind of keeping our reverence to that in one way or another. But at the same time, people treat spirits in such a different way in which they treat other people. And it's such a problematic thing. You know, I was part of a conversation the other day where someone's child was being visited by a spirit, and you know, it was disturbing the child in the night and these things, and people went into this whole big conversation about what it was and why it was there and what it meant, and you know, like this sort of big like why is this happening and who is the spirit and what does it want, and you know, I looked at the conversation and I thought, well, you know. If a human being showed up in my house in the middle of the night, I would not be having that conversation. You know, I would have right. a very different conversation, which is 911. There is a person in my house. Help immediately. And yeah. you know, and yeah. And you know, there's a sort of different set of rules that people apply.
Yeah.
But you know, a casual text, a casual hello. You know, showing up with cookies, you know, the things that make friendships
yeah.
also make our spiritual connections or can make yeah. our spiritual connections.
That's true. And, you know, when I first lived here 15 years ago now, I guess, I had a friend who was a couple of friends who were my naturalist mentors. But this one young woman who actually posed for the Explorer of Earth card in the deck in the Gaia Tarot. We used to go out for walks just to, you know, get in on the gossip of the neighborhood. What's going on? And by that, I mean the birds and the animals. I don't mean people. But we'd be walking down the road and she'd see a red-winged blackbird and she'd say, "Hi, Reddy, how's it going today?" And we'd see a robin and she'd go, "Hey, Robbie, what's up?" You know? Mm-hmm. And I just kind of loved that familiarity she had. And so I picked it up and I still do that. So when I walk out my door, I say, "Hello, beautiful," you know, to the hawthorn tree or whatever I see. I'm having conversations with the different plants and animals. And now it's just totally natural. When I first did it, it was very odd, but now it's second nature. And I think that is how we develop relationships. And I've studied in the last few years with, a number of different wise teachers from more earth-based traditions like the Animas Institute that Bill Plotkin has done. He wrote a book called Soulcraft, and I've studied with a couple of teachers that he trained, and I learned this whole way of being with trees that is similar to what we're just talking about, where you go up and you introduce yourself, you feel the energetics of a tree, and you go up to a tree and you introduce yourself by using some kind of a mythical thing like a name, like, you know, I am she who has traveled a long way to meet you or something like that. And you ask if you can have a conversation and you develop a relationship and you don't ask for anything other than just developing this relationship, because the trees are autonomous beings. It's like they're not just, everything in nature is not just there to give us signs, you know, mm-hmm. and information. They are there having their own lives, and we need to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That really changed the way that I relate mm-hmm. to nature beings when I learned that.
There's a ravine that runs from where my store is down towards where I pick up the subway to go home, And, you know, whenever I can, I try and walk down through there. And there's a particular tree that I like to go and sit under if I'm not in a hurry. And, you know, it's amazing how you start to have this connection to it. And, yeah. You know, when I go and sit there, there are, as you say, there are these friends, right? Whether they're mm-hmm. always the same bird or not is irrelevant, right? There are these yeah. friends mm-hmm. that show up, you know, the red-winged yeah. blackbirds from the little marshy area just around the corner mm-hmm. show up there. And they, you know, often there are woodpeckers and cardinals and, you know, other birds that I see in other places, you know, and just sitting there and listening. And then when they show up, if you sit there still for a while, they come and land in the branches above, right? And then all of a sudden, it's much more conversational. And, you know, and for me, you know, I often sort of say, oh, I'm going to go for my walk and have a conversation with the birds in the trees now. And, mm-hmm. you know, and some people are like, well, what do you mean? What is that a metaphor for? And I'm like, no, it's not a metaphor.
It's not a metaphor.
It is I mean it literally. I'm going to go and sit and listen. And something will come back from that will be important. So, mm-hmm. I also really like the idea of permission and asking permission or looking for permission. A friend of mine practices a spirituality that the person he studied under is from Peru, and it sort of derives from their some of their indigenous practices there. And he everything that he does starts with asking permission. Everything is, he asks permission of the mountain, and he asks permission of the lake and the land and the trees. And, you know, and he goes through this thing, and there's this whole thing. And if something feels off during that process, then that's it. It just stops. It just doesn't continue, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's very amazing the way in which people can have this relationship.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, that moves into ritual space too, because, you know, years and years and years ago when I was trained in Wicca back in the 80s, I guess now, you know, we were taught, you know, spirits of the north, now, you know, commanding the spirits. And somewhere along the way, I heard it a different way and I changed it. And now I invite, I think for me personally, it's disrespectful to call the directions commanding them to be there, and instead I said I'd just like to invite the spirits of the east to come and bring us their gifts of, you know, fresh insight and new beginnings and dawn breaking over the mountains, and I invite them and I can feel them come. And so that's another distinction I make. I think it's rude to command the spirits. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I think other traditions it's not, but for me it is. So
yeah, I came out of ceremonial work, ceremonial magic, mm-hmm. OTO, Crowley, mm-hmm. and that sort of whole line of mm-hmm. approach that I started, you know, as a teenager and did for a long time. And, you know, mm-hmm. I remember having these conversations where it's like, well, you've got to summon them and command them and this and that and all those kinds of things. And as my process evolved, it became a lot more like what you're talking about. It's like, wait a second, I'm going to call up an angel and then I'm going to banish him afterwards? How does that make sense? How does that language go together in a way that, you know, how about I'm going to, like, you know, ring the phone and ask the angel to help me out with something and then go from there? And, you know, there's a sort of real shift, and I don't know where it happens. I was talking with a friend who is very interested in the whole Enochian school of practice that comes from John Dee and sort of mm-hmm. much earlier times. And, you know, all the modern writings on that subject are so much in that Western, you know, you point your sword and you tell them what to do kind of thing. Right. And yet the original work was all devotional. You know, there was ceremony and there was stuff, there were things, mm-hmm. but it was a lot of sitting, saying prayers, meditating, and receiving. And there was none of this sort of command and force structure, you know? So
really,
I wonder where it crept in. You know, I wonder how long it's been there, or if it's just, you know, sort of always been there in certain lines of thought. But,
I don't know. And I've never really studied it because I wasn't drawn to that path. Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
So one of the other things that fascinates me in my peeking in your direction through the internet and so on is this notion of community that I see around you, you know, between the people who surround you on the deck, you know, around the guy in I'll probably get the wrong word, but the guy in Soul Retreats and the guy in Soul Circle and other things that I see, you know, where there's regular meetings virtually or otherwise, as well as the fact that you live in such a small community there with 900 people. How do you handle that? How is that for you?
Which part? All of it?
Well, I don't know. Pick one and we'll talk about that. And then there's another question we can go there.
Well, I think that, you know, as long as I can remember, even going back to high school, and I mean, community has always been something that's really, really important to me. And certainly, as I came into the women's spirituality community in the 80s, you know, it's just something I wouldn't want to be without. And I know that a lot of people are fine being on their own and being solitaries and practicing their spirituality all by themselves. But for me, it's just not so that there's some kind of connection made where when you're with other people, it's greater than, you know, it's like, you know, you have to have your own personal connection to spirit. Absolutely. But to be with other people who are thinking along the same lines as you are is just such a wonderful thing, to know that you're not alone. And, you know, magic happens and relationship happens and love flows. And I think that's how we create a better world. And I know I'm sounding kind of pie in the sky here, but
let's change the world.
Together we can change the world. Who am I quoting there? Somebody. But really, so, you know, I'm part of a lot of different communities because I'm part of goddess spirituality communities, and I'm part of the tarot community, and I'm part of my local, you know, pagan and earth-centered spirituality communities here, and I'm part of this tiny little island community, and I'm part of a writer's community, and, you know, I mean, I find community in a lot of different places. The communities that I tend to lead, certainly since the back in the 90s here in Bellingham, in the Bellingham area, and Seattle and Vancouver as well, I was teaching in person. I was teaching goddess spirituality classes, nature spirituality classes, and tarot. And so in this area, there was a lot of community that kind of got started and then took on a life of its own out of those classes. And then once the internet came, you know, then there's an opportunity to, I think we found community through our blogs, you know, back then before social media really took over. And I met a lot of really wonderful people who, as it turned out, were following the progress of my deck on my blog. And then social media came and I finished the deck, and I had this kind of idea that wouldn't it be cool to have a virtual community around people who really, really love this deck, because there were plenty of communities just for tarot in general, but my deck is different. As you know, it's not for everybody. A lot of people don't like it because it's not for them, but it is for people who find sustenance in nature, who love tarot, and who are interested in the sacred feminine and the sacred masculine, which is both of what I tried to put in this deck. So I created the Gaian Tarot Circle, which was, two live calls a month and then 24/7 forum, And that lasted for 4 years. And then I felt like it was time to move on, because my interests are no longer as tarot centric as they used to be. It's kind of like I used creating the Gaia in Tarot was a way that I brought together all these things that I loved, you know, nature and art and the divine feminine all went into that deck, and the tarot was the structure for it. But after 4 years, I was just kind of like, I need to make the umbrella bigger. And so I kind of rebranded myself into Gaia in Soul. And to me, tarot is this really important tool that we use for all of these other things, for creativity, for guidance, for connecting to nature, you know, for connecting to the divine. So I wasn't even going to start another community, but so many people from the Gaia in Tarot circle really, really wanted it that I thought, okay, well, let's do it. But tarot is part of it. It's not the whole thing. So the area, the topics of conversation are bigger and much more varied, and people plug in at different levels and are very active or not active or whatever works for them. So I'm doing that online. And then, you know, I love Facebook. Facebook has a lot of problems, as we all know, but, you know, at its best, it's the virtual town square where you go and get caught up on news and exchange gossip and sometimes get very, very inspired. And then my retreats and workshops, there's just nothing like being with people face to face. It just takes things to a whole different level. So it's pretty fabulous. The retreat I just did, there were two women who came that both of them I've known for, I think, a decade or more online. And finally getting to be with them in person after all these years was just so wonderful, you know, just so wonderful. And so that's another reason I love going to tarot conferences and different events, because you meet people that you've just known online, and then it takes your friendship to a deeper level. So when you come back to interacting online, you're carrying with you all that, everything that you know about them from being in person. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I find it interesting because I live in Toronto, and mm-hmm. Toronto is, at least amongst the people that I talk to, kind of known for being unable or unwilling or something to sustain community here. I know there are some pockets mm-hmm. of it, but almost everything that I, you know, most of the communities that I know that I've been a part of, they all tend to dissolve. They all tend to separate mm-hmm. or, you know, I think in part there's so much going on that people mm-hmm. get drawn in different directions. And it's very, very right. difficult to sort of build and sustain an ongoing community for kind of almost anybody. So I, you know, I wonder with your group, do people float in and out? Do you think that it is mm-hmm. the topic or the scale at which it's got a sort of enough gravity that it kind of keeps enough core members, or how do you think it got to be so that when you said, well, I think I'm done with this, and people said, no, you can't leave us. We've got to go do something else.
Well, I think, first of all, I think that there's a life cycle to all groups and all communities. I know there is. I don't just think there is. And it, you know, it, you start and you wax like the moon to some kind of a peak experience that you have, and then you kind of wane, and eventually it's just time for the group to dissolve and die, and there's some pain with that, but, you know, then you have a fresh start. So I actually think it's normal and natural for groups to dissolve. Now, how quickly that might happen is a different topic. But, I mean, we're not talking about a huge amount of people here. I think that at its peak, the Gaia in Tarot Circle had maybe 300 members. And with the Gaia in Soul Circle, I think I have something like 120, 130, something like that. And they do come and go. People come and they try it out for a while, and then they decide that either it wasn't what they thought, or they their lives get too busy and go in other directions, and then they leave. There does seem to be kind of a core group who, the more, you know, the more they give, the more they get. I mean, that's just a general spiritual principle, right? If you mm-hmm. show up and you share your life, then other people share with you. But if you don't show up, there's not much point to being there. Although I shouldn't say that, because some people have actually given me the feedback that they don't say anything. They don't show up on the teleseminars. They don't talk, and they don't contribute that much in the forums, but they're still very quiet and listening, and that they do get a lot out of it. So I want to cancel what I just said. There are people that don't necessarily contribute who still get a lot from it. So we're not talking about huge numbers of people, but I'm really grateful to provide that for the people who do want it. Mm-hmm. And again, one of the women from this last weekend that I've known online for a long time and got to meet her for the first time, and she came up to me at one point before she left, and she had tears in her eyes and was thanking me for how important the online communities have been to her. And I didn't know that. So, yeah. So it's a good thing for people not to feel like they're the only one who has this strange combination of interests, you know, mm-hmm.
For
tarot
sure.
Cards, nature, and goddess spirituality. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that from people around my newsletter a lot, you know, where people show up like a year later and they're like, oh my God, this piece that you wrote like a year ago about this was, you know, and they're just, you know, it hit them at the right time and was the right kind of thing and changes a lot of stuff. So,
absolutely. That's why we do this, right?
Mm-hmm. So how about where you are, you and 900 people? I mean, is it? If there's 900 people, you're fairly spread out. Yeah, exactly. Is it spread out? Are they all artists and wild crafters and magical people, or what's it like to live with that?
No, yeah, there's a wide range of people here. There's everything from people whose families have been here for 100 years or more, to people who just got here. And there are a lot of artists and a lot of wildcrafters and people like that. But there's also lots of very conservative people. And, there's a lot of fisher people. Fishing's big. Construction people. I mean, there's the gamut. You know, it's not like it's this little hippie haven or something. There's all kinds of people here. And since I've returned, I've been gone almost as much as I've been physically here. So I haven't had time yet really to go to community gatherings and start building relationships. I've just done a little bit. And I'm really looking forward to meeting people again. I have reconnected with people that I knew years ago, and that's been lovely. So I would say right now I only really know what I would call a handful of people. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to contributing to the community again here. And when I lived here before, I was on the board of a couple of nonprofits, and I'm not sure I want to take that on again, but I definitely want to do some kind of volunteering somewhere. I just don't know what yet.
Nice. So, you know, where I live, I'm thinking that if you went 200 feet in every direction from my house, you'd probably hit 1,000 people total living in that space.
Yeah, that's different.
You know, I mean, it's such a, because I live right downtown, right? And there are apartment buildings sort of surrounding where I live. And, my partner and I talk about moving to the country because she grew up in rural Nova Scotia. And she's like, I just want to get out there. And, you know, it's a sort of constant recurring back and forth about what that would mean and how that could mm-hmm. possibly work and those kinds of things. And I it's interesting because I really love being in nature, but I'm not quite sure how that would be to raise kids, to, you know, like some of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And
Well, I think it depends on where you go. You know, I mean, you don't have to move to a tiny community with 900 people that's only accessible by a ferry. There's other options. You can move to a place that's rural but close to, you know, a city. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just something that you'll have to find out for yourself. But I do think that some people have this romantic idea of what it's like, and then they get there and it's like, ooh, I don't really like this after all. I'd rather visit. And that's great too. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, in Ontario, to get to anywhere that's sort of particularly wild is quite a drive now. You know, all the surrounding, Toronto amalgamated a bunch of suburbs a number of years ago now. Mm-hmm. And sort of after amalgamation, there were these other cities around it that were sort of considered separate and were separated by farmlands and other mm-hmm. stuff. And that's basically going away now. You know, you've got to drive an hour and a half to kind of get anywhere.
Yeah. But you have parks. Right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you have the lake, right?
We do. And we have the island. Love going to the island, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it's fascinating. I really love the idea of having more access. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things. I think that connection is there if you look for it. But it's never quite the same. We spent 4 days up near Bancroft in Ontario, which is up near Algonquin Park, and we got to, with a cabin that we stayed on, if you walk through their neighbor's property, you can end up at this lake that you can't get to except through private property, and there's only three sides that have access. Like, basically nobody goes there. The people who own the property were like, if you go there and you see someone, it'll be one of these three people, and chances are you won't, because they never go there anymore. And you know, there's definitely a big difference, though. The amount of wildlife, you know, my 7-year-old brought her fishing rod and was fishing and stuff, and just the amount of aliveness in those places and the way in which it is both quiet and speaks at the same time is just so utterly wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for us, when we want to go on vacation, often we want to go to a big city. We want to go up to Vancouver, BC for the day, or, you know, we desire the opposite of what we have often, you know, when, I'm very, very, very happy to be back. We both are, Craig and I both are thrilled to be back. And, I'm just looking forward to being home for a while. I have one more trip to take to Texas, and then I'm home. So
nice.
Yeah.
So, Oracle deck.
Yeah.
What's that going to be like, if you can talk about that?
Yeah, I can talk about it. I've set myself a goal of finishing the first draft of the book by the end of the year, and I think I'm going to make it. I'm pretty happy about that. But I did a painting a couple of years ago. Well, I should probably back up by saying that when I finished The Guy in Tarot, I was so sick of doing photorealistic colored pencil art that I didn't literally do this, but it was like I locked the colored pencils away. I was so tired of doing that style of art and working with the colored pencils. And I spent a couple of years just experimenting with different art forms, like encaustic wax and acrylic paints and just all kinds of different things. And nothing really took. And then I kind of came up with this medium. And if I'm boring you, let me know, because I love to talk art technique, but
no, I
came
it.
Up with a okay, good. I did this painting a couple of years ago called Elder of the Scar Clan, which was of a crone woman with a Hallamas autumn background, and she had a scar over her breast and over her heart. And it was a very intense, very healing piece of art that I did. But aside from the content of the art, I was thrilled with the medium that emerged, which was kind of was ink and salt and all kinds of oil pastels. And then the very top layer was colored pencil. And I thought, that's it. Only use colored pencils for the very top layer. And it was much more stylized than I had been drawing. And I that's the style that I want to take my art in the future. And I woke up in the middle of the night about a month after I had created that piece and went, oh, there needs to be 8 of them. You know, there needs to be one for each season on the wheel of the year. And she was obviously the Hallamas woman. And then I wanted there to be like the numinous being that represented each of the 8 holy days on the wheel of the year. And And this is not a new idea, you know, in goddess spirituality. That's been around. That idea has been around for a long time, that each mm-hmm. holiday has a corresponding season to time of your life. But then I thought, what about eight animals, eight plants, eight sacred objects? Because I thought, well, I don't want to do 78 cards again, but I could do an oracle deck that's maybe 36 cards or something like that. So that was my initial idea, to do this, do an oracle deck based on the Wheel of the Year. And I decided this time, though, that I wanted to write the book first. And so I started working on the book. And then I went to, and so there were eight sections, you know, one for each of the holy days. And then within that section, there were these different parts. And I started writing, like, the voice of each of the numinous beings and a blessing and other things. And then I took it to a writing retreat with Christina Baldwin, who's one of my mentors, and she wrote The Seven Whispers and Story Catcher, and she wrote Life's Companion, Journaling as a Spiritual Quest, and those kinds of things. I showed her what I had done so far and showed her the cards and showed her my idea, and she's a big fan of the Gaia Tarot, and she said, you know, you have to put story in here. You have to put memoir in here. And I kind of went, what? What? So I worked with her for that week. And I realized, so that in each of the eight sections of the book, part of it is a story from my life at that time of my life. So kind of moving into the storytelling and the memoir, as well as all the other parts. So I feel like I'm rattling on too much, but basically I want to finish the book before I go back and do the art. And what it feels like to me now is that the book is probably going to be standalone, and then the oracle cards will be related to it, but separate. So the little divinatory book would probably not be part of this other book that I'm writing right now. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at.
Fascinating. I really like the idea of, you know, I mean, there are some readers and creators who are just like, you know, this is nothing to do with my life, or I'm not sharing anything to do with my life about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like right now I'm writing a beginner's book on working with the Thoth deck that sort of bypasses all the, doesn't bypass it. It comes out of all the esoteric stuff, but it is written in plain English and without having to know any of that stuff to access the material. And, you know, that book is completely, there's no autobiographical content, you know, it doesn't belong there. But in a lot of the stuff that I do, I think that autobiographical content is very interesting and very profound. And it's often by, hearing other people's stories or telling my story, or, you know, that people really come to connect and to, you know, to see in themselves, both their strengths and their weaknesses and ways out of where they've gotten stuck and all sorts of wonderful things. So it sounds really wonderful. I can't wait to read it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I think story is really important. I think that when we still tell our personal stories, whether it's writing or sitting around having a conversation, you know, it's like when people hear somebody else's story and then hear maybe how they faced a terrible time in their lives or choices that they made, or, you know, it helps us. It helps the person listening to, you know, oh, maybe I can be healed too, or maybe I can be inspired to live my life a different way or something like that. So, I'm big on story.
Well, and I think that the medium really also is relevant and is important. You know, I think that the process around which you're going through towards creating these things, I like that idea of I'm going to go and figure out what might become something, as opposed to I'm going to sit down and hammer out this craft that I already have.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Well, who wants to be stuck doing the same thing over and over their whole lives, right? I mean, you want to grow and change.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's, I think that when some of the most inspiring people to me are the people who don't hold on to the same old soy mold and allow things to change and shift and become something else. And, you know, it's, I'm starting my second deck now. I did a deck a year ago ish called, the Tarot Waiting to Happen. And, you know, and then I'm now starting the process of creating a full deck, and I hear you about the dauntingness of 78 cards. I'm like, that's a lot of cards. And this one is going to be, an Orisha deck based on my practices and my participation in, you know, the Afro-Cuban traditions.
And so
for the last, you know, at first I was like, because mostly I paint in gouache. That's my kind of practice. And I was thinking, my life is not set up to commit 8 to 10 hours per card, you know, between running the store and having little kids and, like, I don't have that kind of time to set up or, you know, I don't even have a space to set up other than the kitchen table to work. And so it's not like I can leave it out or just step in and work and step out or, you know, I'm just like, I got to figure this out. And while I was thinking about that, I started working on my iPad, just sort of hammering out the notions of how I wanted to represent the figures and the landscapes and the different ideas and stuff like that. And as I started doing that, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it all in here. I'm just gonna, you know, basically it's you can draw all sorts of stuff. My gouache style is very well suited to the program that I'm working with. And I'm like, you know what? And then it's always with me. I can just open it up and pull out my stylus and work. And then I can, you know, it may still be 8 hours per card, but it is immediate in a way that, that otherwise I just couldn't access. So, and we'll see what that, we'll see what that dictates about the final outcome of the cards as well. You know, I'm sure it'll shape their style, but, yeah, very fun.
That's great. I'm very jealous of people that can work that quickly. To me, 8 hours a card is like nothing. You know, there's probably 80 to 100 hours in each of the cards that I did, which is one reason why it took me 9 years to finish the whole deck, besides having a life. But I think it's a fabulous idea, Andrew. I can't wait to see it.
Well, there are some, if people are listening and they're interested in checking it out, there's a Facebook page for the store, which if you search The Hermit's Lamp, you should find. And there's a photo album called Orisha Decks or something like that. If you look in the albums, you'll see it. And I've started posting some samples of just drawing some of the characters, some of the spirits. And then I've been working on what the landscape is going to look like and some of the background things. And the other thing that I'm going to include in this, I think, which I'm still kind of playing around with, is a mix of drawing, you know, drawing in this, in this style, and then also including for things, for some of the elements, I'm going to start exploring, photographing or finding samples of fabrics and including those as part of the, you know, part of the background. I wanted to create something that sort of fits into the overall aesthetic of the tradition of the beadwork and the fabric and the, you know, all these kinds of things. And so I wanted it to kind of reflect those elements. And so I'm thinking, we'll see how it works out. But currently I'm thinking that some of the things like, you know, the sky in a card might be a piece of fabric instead of me drawing clouds and things, you know, and stuff like that to, you know, like if there's a field, it might be better to make it out of fabric, you know, and, or like something like that. We'll see. I'm exploring.
I love
but
that
it's
idea.
Fun. So
because I
want to include these historical references as well as sort of my personal takes and different ideas and stuff like that. So yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, well, let's hope, right?
Yeah.
So if people are looking for you after we've listened to this, where online should they come and look for you? Where are you hanging out that they might be able to, you know, hang out in that town square or whatever and meet you?
I am fairly active on Facebook. I've actually been trying to dial it down a little bit, but that's still, it's pretty easy to find me on Facebook. So It's facebook.com/JoannaPelColbert. I have a Gaia in Tarot page on Facebook, but it's not active. I can't handle everything. So some things had to go, and that I don't maintain it anymore, but it's still there. But my main website is Gaian Soul. So mm-hmm. GAIANSOUL.com. And I have a free little 22-day e-course called, I can't remember what it's called now, but it's Creative Sparks Using the Major Arcana, that if you sign up to get my newsletter, that's your little free gift. That I've had a lot of great feedback on that course. People like it. And if you just want to see the deck, you can go to GaianTarot.com.
Great.
I'm a big Instagrammer too, so if you're on Instagram, I'm Joanna P. Colbert. Mm-hmm. But most everything gets cross-posted to Facebook from that.
Yeah, and if you're on Instagram, I'm on Instagram too. I have a secret.
Oh, yeah.
I have a secret life as a fan of architecture over there. It's this sort of funny thing that kind of happens. I was talking to my partner the other day, and I was like, you know, I have a secret life, and I get this look like, what, you know? And and I'm like, I have a secret life of my fan of architecture. You know, when I went to art school, mostly I studied sculpture, but I, for reasons I can no longer even remember, some of my history classes ended up being architecture classes, and I really developed a fascination with it. So I walk around town and I photograph architectural features and stuff like that, as well as a bit of other stuff too. But yeah, I really hear you about that. I can't be everywhere, you know. It's so many places and so many things. It's like, where's the real connection, you know?
Yeah,
where is that point where you're actually feeling something that's worthwhile?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's Gaia and Soul Circle first, I would say, but that's a paid thing, even though I kept the price really low. But as far as social media goes, for me, it's Facebook, mm-hmm. at least for now.
So, yeah, exactly. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on here. And it's been wonderful to get to chat with you.
Yeah, you too. It's all, it's almost as good as being there in person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for listening. Please do make sure that you subscribe, and I would certainly appreciate it if anyone you know you think would like this, that you send it along to them. You can follow this at thehermitslamp.com, or you can find us in iTunes. And if you are on iTunes, it would be wonderful if you would go there and give us a rating, so that I can help extend the reach of this to other tarot lovers who might be interested. Thank you again for your time and listening. Bye-bye.